All right, guys. So the So this is a article book translated by me. Rav Kook is difficult to translate, and you definitely lose a lot in the translation. But it's a well worthwhile piece. It's a classic piece. But you're going to have to kind of hold head. Is that it? I don't know if that's it. I don't think that's it. Do you even know where they're more? All right. So this is actually called Achdut HaKolelet, the oneness that includes. It is natural that according to the usual perspective, that of monotheism, which is the most well-known, that it engenders at times sadness and weakness because it portrays mankind as a product limited, weak, and far from the divine perfection. What did he just say? Yeah.
That there are problems with monotheism.
What's the problem?
That it makes people sad.
Why does it make people sad? How does it limit mankind?
Product, limited, weak.
That's right, because I'm a product, right? I'm a product of God. He's perfect.
It's too usual.
I'm far from divine perfection. And so monotheism, as I pointed out yesterday, is monotheism is this infinite, perfect, all-knowing God over there who snapped his fingers. And ludicrously, for some whim-of-the-moment decision, it feels like, created us, and we next will never feel good enough, never feel right enough. And so that's the downside. And what, as I mentioned yesterday, Rav Kook is going to kind of look at the upside and the downside of these two philosophical orientations. All right? This weakness is especially aroused by the obvious ethical deficiencies of man because of his limitation of the stature of humans compared to the divine perfection in matters of righteousness and ethics. So he's making two points. One, existentially, the fact that I'm not God and I'm a product of God and I'm far away from his divine perfection, that already makes me feel weak and insecure and insignificant. But added to that, what? I'm already born a weakling, but added to that, that's right, I've made lots of mistakes. So I only made things worse, right? So I'm existentially, the fact of life is that I am a product far and separate from divinity, from perfection. And added to that, I have made it worse because my behavior is only compatible, okay? It is, however, possible to minimize this weakness to the extent man reaches a higher ethical stature in principle and action. Yeah, you could work on being a tzaddik, but even then the weakness isn't completely absolved. But nonetheless, there will always be the infinite God and the infinitesimal me. And that will never seem to ever go away. Okay, no matter what I do and no matter how hard I try, every step towards the infinite leaves me an infinite journey ahead of me. And it's very easy to be despaired. All right? So that's the downside of monotheism. Less tiring to man is the monotheistic outlook that inclines towards the explanation of pantheism. Okay? Now, I want you to know that Rav Kook never uses the word panentheism. And I was struggling with that. And so I called an expert in Rav Kook, a Rabbi L., who's written many, many books, and is a real bucky in Rav Kook. He lives in Bnei Brak. He's actually an American. And I said, where does Rav Kook use the term panentheism? And he said to me, in volume 2, page 399. I said, no, he doesn't, right? I teach that all the time. He said, no, he does. And so he pulled open the book. He said, oh, no, you're right. He never uses the word panentheism. And the reason for that is that the word panentheism is only 50 years old, right? It's a term that was coined only 50 years old in the academic world. Rav Kook didn't know this term, right? The word he uses, anyways, he didn't speak English. He wrote Hebrew. The word that Rav Kook uses generally is achdut kolelet, a oneness that includes, that encompasses. Okay, you don't have a sheet. Are there more sheets somewhere? So what he refers to as monotheism that inclines towards pantheism, okay? It's monotheism because there's one God and you're not God, but it's pantheism because, what? Because there's nothing but God, okay? Even though you're not God, all right? So that's why it's a hybrid. It's got the monotheistic point where you're not God, but it's got the pantheistic point of view where there's nothing but God. Put that together is there's nothing but God, you're not God, but you are included within God. All right? That there is nothing besides the divine. And he says, when it's purified by the dross, as found in Chassidut. Okay? Most experts in Rav Kook say that he's referring to the writings of Chabad. Rav Kook was very influenced by the writings of Chabad. He wasn't a Chabadnik. Actually, not quite true. His mother was a Chabadnik, and his father was a Misnagid. It's just really who he is. It's remarkable how his teachings literally is the bridging of these two worlds. That's why I so love his teachings. Man finds himself, although without an independent content, that in tearing himself away from divine perfection, he is certainly weak and essentially nothing. What did he just say? Okay? What's the downside of panentheism? We know the downside of monotheism. The downside is I'm far from divinity and I feel insignificant in the presence of divinity. But what's the downside of panentheism, Ellie?
It's like no independent sense of self.
Exactly. Right? You get it? Well, in monotheism, at least I have an independent self, okay? So monotheism, there's an independent self. I'm too lazy to write on the board, okay? You write independent self, but over here, there's no independent self, right? I'm a facet of, I exist within the divine and completely dependent on the divine, okay? So that's what he says. Man finds himself, although without an independent content, that in tearing himself from the divine, he is certainly weak in essentially nothing. In other words, in panentheism, if you believe that you exist independent of God, then you are zero. In monotheism, if you believe that you are independent of God, you are what? Are you zero? Well, what are you? You're tiny. Exactly. You're really insignificant. You're infinitesimal. But you are. But in panentheism, if you divorce yourself from a connection to God, you don't exist, right? So I gave you that example. Imagine a dialogue between two men in my mind. I create these two guys in my mind, okay? One guy's name is Joe. The other guy's name is Harry. Joe says to Harry, "Harry, have you ever wondered how we came to be?" Well, Joe says, you remember when we were in Hebrew school, we used to sing Davis here and Davis there and Davis truly everywhere, up, down, all around, here, there. Right? He says, yeah, that was a stupid song. He says, well, it's not so stupid because, Harry, you and I exist within Dave. Harry said, what have you been drinking, man? Like, what is wrong with you? Right? Right? We exist within Dave? Yeah. What does that mean? It means that if Dave stops thinking about us right this second, you and I don't exist. It means that if we try to define ourselves outside of Dave, we are zero, right? So now this is the beginning of, you have to understand that Torah is saying that if you define yourself independent of a relationship to Hashem, you really don't have any existence. Even if you think you do, you've lost the very ground of your existence. A human being that stands outside of a relationship to Hashem basically has forfeited his existence. Right? In monotheism, the guy says, you know, I don't believe in God, because I don't like being infinitesimal in his presence, right? But in panentheism, if you disregard God in your life, you're basically disregarding the very ground, context, and essence of who you are. So you can't be who you are without God in a panentheistic orientation. All right? Somebody had a question over here. Yeah.
Is it possible to be a panentheist in a religion that has more than one God?
No.
But why can't you be a part of, why can't different gods, I mean, I guess, theoretically be a part of you? I mean, or you...
No, you can have different facets. That's why you have different names of God. Just like me, I have different names. I'm a rabbi, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm an author. These are different names and different facets of me. But I'm all that, and I'm much more than all that, and all that is included within me or facets of me, right? But they're not independent. They're not separate, okay? So, yes, we have different names of Shem, which are basic different facets of experiencing our connection to Hashem, yeah? You're asking the free choice question, which we're going to get to. I have to build the whole picture. Yeah. We're moving in for it. We're moving in for the close, okay? But you're right, right? These two guys in my mind don't have free choice. But we do. How could that be? How can a part of God have free choice to go against God? That's the big question, okay? And we're going to get there, yeah. Okay. All right, so... In monotheism, you have an independent yet infinitesimal existence. In panentheism, you have no independent existence. Okay? And if you try to see yourself independent of God, you've essentially cut the ground from beneath your feet. Okay? He is even more nothing than in the first outlook, monotheism, where he has an independent reality, will, awareness, feelings, greatness. However, not absolute nothingness in essence. Okay. Not so in the second outlook, panentheism, which holds there is nothing outside of the divine, which, if so, a preoccupation in man's particular inclinations based on an outlook that he has an independent reality is but a vain illusion. What's his point? Because this is the very serious practical implications of a panentheist versus a monotheist. It has to do with what matters to you. Okay? What's he saying? Yeah, no.
That even if you try to divorce yourself from God, then it's merely an illusion.
That's true, but he's saying something even more serious. You're right. He's saying that, but he actually already said that. He's adding another thing. What should be primary on your mind all the time? God. What you can do for God. What has any relationship to God. If you care about your little puny self, then you're living an illusion. You know, if all you care about is, you know, your house with two cats in the yard, and, you know, if that's what's on your mind, for those of people who know Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, if that's all you really care about, then you are totally out of touch with reality. If you care about your little life, right, and all that matters to you is you got a nice car, and you got a nice house, and you got a great job, and you don't care about the big picture, right, then you are completely betraying who you are because you're part of the big picture. You're like an actor in a play. And as an actor in a play, you care about everybody in the play, and your whole life is devoted to what the play is about. But if you say, I don't care about anybody here, and I'm not interested in any bigger themes, I just care about myself. The most selfless thing you could do in panentheism is to be selfish. Right? If you are selfish, you have no sense of self. A panentheist... Their very sense of self is rooted in, how can I serve God? And that's the most selfish thing they could think of, right? To say, how does my life serve justice? How does my life serve peace? How does my life serve kindness? How does my life serve love in the world? All right? Because my whole life is rooted in and a facet of God. And so God is the ground of my life. He's the essence of my life. He's the theme of my life. And that means that all I care about is actualizing divine values. But if all I care about is, did I get that new iPod? Did I get that new car? You know, am I wearing the latest jeans? You are completely divorced from reality. You are living a completely unreal life. And it'll crash, right? Because you're living a life of smoke. It's all an illusion, right? In a monotheistic world, you say, you know what? I'm not God. There's him, there's me, but there's me. You know, yeah, hanging around, it makes me feel infinitesimal, right? But quite frankly, I don't want to hang around him, right? I don't want to hang around him. And I've got my life. That's the implications of a monotheistic orientation. But when you have this understanding of Hashem as the very ground, context, essence of all, that's this week's parsha. Anochi, I am. And who am I? There's one I am. And that I am all there ever was, is, and ever will be. Yud Kei Vav Kei. I am existence. I am the context. I am the place. I am the space of your life. Right? Elohecha. And I am the soul of your soul. Right? And you are a vehicle through which I become present in this world. Right? Right. Yud Kei Vav Kei is I am transcendent and all-embracing. Elohecha is I am imminent and I become manifest through you. If you live that life, then you're in touch with reality. And quite frankly, Judaism is about being in touch with reality. And when you're in touch with reality, you'll be happy, you'll be strong, and you'll be real. Right? That's the implications. What is on your mind? You know, I think I shared this idea, but I heard it from another rabbi. Like, you could have two guys in the army, and they both want new army boots. So one goes, you know, to the surplus, and he says, you know, I need new army boots. The guy says, why? He said, well, my friend, he got new army boots, and they're really uncomfortable, and I don't like the way these look. I want new army. Why shouldn't I get new army boots, too? Right? The other guy says, I need new army boots. He said, why? He says, because I'm a soldier for the Jewish people. And the Jewish people are light into the world. And our job is to, and God's name is written on us, and we are a vehicle to bring greater God consciousness to the world. And I can't do that if I don't have new shoes. Because I need those boots so I can be the best servant to the Jewish people who are the best servants of God. Two guys, four boots. Why? One's in touch with reality. The other completely lost in his ego. The problem living an egotistical life is you have no life at all. Right? It's not that he's egotistical, you're not. Right? Ego people don't exist. They have literally forfeited the foundation of what it really means to be real. And it'll hit them. It'll hit them hard. And they'll realize that they were living in a world, it's just mirrors. And nothing, none of this is real, right? Nothing is real. Ever been in a room where there's mirrors and just thousands of you, but you know, you could actually think this is real. I'm just so expansive, right? But you're not. And that's what Torah is about. Torah is about teaching you to live klal, right? That I see myself of having an identity because I'm part of a bigger story, because I'm serving a bigger story. But when people live their little puny stories, and it's all about their silly little stories, and their story has nothing to do with a story much greater than themselves, they don't stand. That's their hell. It's just a matter of time before it'll hit them. But it'll hit them, right? So this is the difference, right? Any questions on that? It's a pretty intense point. Yeah, Ryan.
Before you said that,
yes, but that means how can I serve the greater whole?
So, shouldn't the question we should be asking is how can my avodah Hashem better myself and make me more godly? That's like
No, no. That could be a really ego thing too. How can I be more godly? You can be more godly when you help other people be more godly, okay? But if it's just about yourself, like Judaism isn't about go to some mountain, meditate, and be pure. It's not about that. It's about tikkun olam. It's what are you going to fix in the world? There's something you can fix in the world, right? And you care about the world because you always care about the bigger picture, right? Because you're selfish, right? Because you're selfish, you care about the bigger picture because you're part of a bigger picture. And when you deny yourself as part of a bigger picture, that is really losing yourself. Right? But people who are locked in their egos, and all they little care about and all they talk about is their little puny things, right? And they want more stuff, and they get bigger places to put more stuff, right? And it's all about buying more stuff. It's not about serving. It's not about enhancing the bigger picture. So that's the point. You know, it's like a person who's a tuba player and he doesn't want to be part of a symphony. And he decides that he's going to be a solo tuba player. I don't think there are any solo tuba players in the world. But this guy thinks that I can have meaning outside of a symphony. There's no meaning to a tuba player outside of a symphony. And so, too, there's no meaning to any individual human being outside the context of a greater whole, a greater self, the one self that we all share and we all serve, which is what we refer to when we say Hashem or God. Okay? Now the question is, what's my part in the story? But I'm here to serve the story. And it's very selfish. It is very selfish. I feel really good when I'm in service of a greater story. I feel very small when all I can care about is my new shoes. You know, I was at the home of somebody, and they were joking, right? A very wealthy guy, and his friend said, there was two friends there, and one friend said to the other, he says, do you know that he has 200 pairs of shoes? And the guy was like laughing. He has 200 pairs of shoes, right? How many feet do you have? I mean, when do you even have a chance to put on 200 pairs of shoes? What do you need 200 pairs of shoes for? Who has time to go buy 200 pairs of shoes? Okay? But is that what you're doing? If you can afford 200 pairs of shoes, then you should be giving it to 200 poor people. You don't need 200 pairs of shoes. But if people are living these extravagant lives, right? And it doesn't really make you happy in the end, right? What's your service? How do you see yourself in a bigger story? Okay? So, back to C. Not so in the second outlook, panentheism, which holds there's nothing outside the divine, which, if so, a preoccupation of man's particular inclinations, based on a light look that he has an independent reality, is but a vain illusion. It would seem, then, that such an outlook would weaken man even more than the first. You might think, well, oh my gosh, this makes me feel so weak. I can't take care of myself, right? I should feel guilty eating this chocolate bar because there's, you know, kids in, you know, somewhere in the dark, you know, jungles don't have a child. So you could feel that this could go drive you crazy, this kind of thinking. However, not so. It actually restores to man the vitality of his eternity, right? In other words, when you see yourself within the context of a greater whole self, of a one God, in service of that one God that we all share, then that gives you a sense of eternity. But when you're all by yourself, then you're here today and you're gone tomorrow. And what is going to be lasting about anything you did? You know, it's like they say that Sir Baron Rothschild asked his accountant, I want you to bring me an accounting of all my assets. So his accountant brought him an accounting of all his money and all his property. He said, I didn't ask for that. I asked for my assets. I said, well, sir, this is your assets. He said, no, I want you to bring me the accounting of my charitable giving this year. And he says, sir, that's not called assets. And he says, no, you don't understand. Everything I have and I own, I could lose. But everything I gave away will be mine forever. Right? That's a man who thinks in service, right? That's a man who thinks in service. It's like, I got it to give it away, not to hold on to it, and not to pamper myself. It's to bring tikkun olam. And so that's where your eternity is. That's when what you do lasts. It only encourages him not to forget the truth of his existence, and that is upon him to distance him from any ways of life derived from the illusion that there is to himself an independent reality torn from divine Ein Sof. That's what Judaism is about. It's to constantly remind yourself, here, I got tzitzis, I'm connected, right? I am connected. I am tied in to a greater whole, okay? I'm part of a tapestry. That's, I'm connected. So you constantly remind yourself, I don't have a self-contained, independent, self-centered identity, right? I am part of a greater whole, right? And that's where I find myself. I find myself within a greater self, and I lose myself when I don't. So if you want to be a whole person, then a whole person is part of a whole story and a whole soul, right? That's how you become whole, by being part of a whole. And so if you're not part of a whole, and you just live this tiny little self-centered life about your vacations and your job and your interior design and your new car and your new home, and that's what your whole life revolves around. I'm not saying you can't have a nice home. That's not the point. The point is, what's the theme of your life? What's on your mind? Right. What really do you care about? Yeah.
What about people who just intuit this and just like take someone like Abraham Lincoln, who's he not a particularly religious person, but nonetheless he's doing good, and ultimately it kind of comes down to action. So
that's great. That's great.
So
but could he have done better?
Why do you necessarily need the mind?
Look, I have to understand. Many times people say to me, "I have a happy life. I'm very happy with my life. So what do I need Judaism for?" So I say, "Well, do you think you could be happier?" They said, "Well, you can always be happier." Okay, so here. I'm not going to say to a person, "You're for sure miserable because you don't put on tzitzit." I'm not saying that. The question is, you know, if a person drinks Coca-Cola their whole life, and they've been told it's the real thing, they believe it's the real thing, but they never tasted champagne, right? So they don't even know what they're missing, okay? They can have it even better. Why wouldn't you want it even better, okay? So, yes, what's really amazing about a life of ritual, and what I say is rich about ritual, is that it constantly builds consciousness, right? Constantly builds consciousness. I'm part of a greater story. I wear the team shirt. I got the team hat. We walk around making little signs to each other, right? And we're all saying Shema. We are part of a greater story, right? And that's what it means on Pesach. It says, all who increase the story, right? What does it mean? Kol marbe b'sipur yitzim. How much can you talk about it? So some explain what it really means is you've got to continue to write the story. But if you don't see your story now as the continuation of a story that happened with Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah getting out of Egypt, then your story is not an episode in an endless series. It's just a one-off, you know. It's a special that nobody remembers, and maybe they'll find you on YouTube someday, right? But you're finished. So the question is your life an episode in an eternal series? And do you see it that way, right? Do you see yourself continuing the story of getting out of Egypt? And that story is all about a people who are committed to getting out of slavery. Every form of slavery, refusing to be a slave to addictions, to disorders, whatever it is, right? And so that's what Jewish life is about. And that's what halacha constantly pushes you back to. Yeah.
But there are other traditions out there that do include ritual and do include being part of a story and being part of something.
They could be really great. Nothing wrong if it's their path. All the power to them. I'm not trying to convince a Buddhist to be Jewish.
Right, but what about a Jew who became involved in Buddhism?
Because it's not their path. I'll give you an example. There was a fellow that I met who grew up in Muncie in a very Haredi home, and he was really running away from Judaism, and he decided that he was going to become a Buddhist monk. Parents freaking out, father wearing a black hat, the whole thing, and the son's becoming a Buddhist monk, and he's moving to Western Canada to a Buddhist monastery, right? And he says to me, the only thing I'm concerned about, right, is that they're going to ask me to change my name, and I refuse to change my name. His name was Shloimeh. Come on, you can't be a Buddhist monk with the name Shloimeh. You know, Shloimeh, the Buddhist monk? I said, why don't you want to change your name? He said, I don't want to change my name. I said, then you're never going to stay there, right? That's why the Jewish people got out of Egypt, because they refused to change their name, right? You're going through a process. You're going through a phase. I don't believe you're going to stay in this Buddhist monastery. And quite frankly, I believe you want to go to a Buddhist monastery because some of the teachings of Buddhism that are also in Judaism, you didn't encounter in Judaism, and you're looking for balance, right? But I could show you a lot of those ideas that you're drawn to over there were all along here also. Okay. The question is, you got to find your path. It's like you're part of a story, and you got to play your part. And if you've been born in this world to play a Jewish part, well, why not play your Jewish part? You know. And most people, it's because they have no clue what's in Judaism. That's the sad thing, is they really didn't get a good Jewish education. And most people have the wrong understanding of Judaism, which is even worse. You know, I'd rather them not know anything about Judaism than have a completely distorted understanding of Judaism. Okay, let's do a little bit more, and then you can ask some more questions. Once, last line of C, once he is on this path, however, he need not conquer anything real, only an illusion, and he will already be happy in the Ein Sof. What do you have to conquer in your life? But what's the word he used? The illusion. And what is that illusion? That you're exactly, that you're separate from a greater whole, that you're separate from each other, right? But we are not separate from each other. I'm just talking to myself right now. You're part of me and I'm part of you, and the right hand is talking to the left hand, but we're not separate. Even though the space is suggesting that we are, we're really not. And you can look in quantum physics, there's more and more coming out in terms of, you know, Einstein saying that space is an illusion, although a productive, helpful illusion, but he's saying space is what separates us to space? But if space is an illusion, then we're not separate at all, okay? And so that's really what you got to battle, is the illusion that you're separate from each other and separate from a greater whole, separate from Hashem. And once you get over that illusion, you'll be happy, as it says, Oz v'chedva bimkomo. Confidence and joy is in his place. When you find yourself within the context of a greater self, a greater whole, Hashem, you will be immediately happy. This job, however, is not as easy as it seems. To liberate oneself from the prison of imagination is no less difficult than from an actual prison, right? This is a perception, and quite frankly, this is an illusion, that we actually think that we're separate from each other, and we start speaking Lashon Hora, and that just continues to add more of that separateness. But the problem is that this perception is not easy to get out of. It's a prison. I might have shared with you, my kids and I were at the zoo, and we were in watching the monkeys, enjoying the monkeys. And a friend of mine happened to walk by, and he said, did you notice that there's no cage? When I was a kid, everything had a cage in a zoo. But the biblical zoo, you'll see that some of them actually don't have cages. So I said, why don't these monkeys just get out of here? I mean, he's right. It's an enclosure, but there's just a little fence. Why don't those monkeys just jump over the fence? So I said, yeah, you're right. Why don't they? He says, because there's a little moat of water, and monkeys are afraid of water. So there's a moat of water that's this big, right? That wide in front of them. And what keeps them in their cage, or actually what keeps them in this enclosure, is their fear of water. And he said, do you realize it's their fears that are imprisoning them? And then he walked away, right? That was a revelation. Your fears are imprisoning you, right? So too, your perceptions of yourself are your prison. And someone's going to help you get out of your prison, okay? But the more you perceive yourself as separate from everyone, and a foreigner to everyone, and that we're all really disconnected, but we're really all different parts of one body. We're really cells in a community of one body. Okay? So he says, this job, however, is not as easy as it seems to liberate them from the prison of imagination, not less difficult than the actual prison. Nonetheless, this perspective will eventually restore man's vitality more than the first which is monotheism. We, however, cannot approach this perspective, panentheism, without first becoming accustomed and learned in the first perspective, which will then clothe the later outlook in the light of all details becoming its receptacle. And here's the important point. Yes, don't tell people you're panentheists. We're monotheists. Because there's an advantage to believing that God is somewhere over there. What was the advantage? A sense of self, a self of distinction. I'm not you, you're not me. The downside is I'm not you, you're not me, and we're separate from each other and possibly in conflict with each other. But in order for there to be details, right, that truth of panentheism had to be hidden. And we have to be allowed to experience ourselves separate from each other and separate from God, okay? And so that perspective kind of shields us from the potential danger of panentheism, which would whitewash everything. And everything would become homogenized and everything would melt into a melting pot of divine oneness. And that's definitely not what we're talking about. We're talking about, I'm not you, you're not me, we're different but we're one. And I'm not God, we're different, but we're one. All right? So Rav Kook is saying that educationally, you have to teach monotheism first. Basically, in your practical life, you act as if you're a monotheist, but in your deepest depth, you know that the truth is that we are one with each other and we are one with Hashem. Okay, so now look at what Albert Einstein says. I'm sorry. Although the theoretical, experiential, and poetic world ascends through the second outlook, panentheism is very psychedelic, right? It's like very experiential and poetic. We're all one. We live in love. Love is our context. Love is our essence. You know, it's all very beautiful. The practical world cannot proceed according to this high view, and man must diminish his light and attach himself first to the first outlook. However, with clarity, that monotheism alone is not the clearest knowledge, rather an attribute of the second outlook. And therefore, when we see the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, we say Adonai. We see panentheism, but we talk monotheism, right? We understand panentheism, but we still talk monotheism, all right? And that's what it means in Psachim on the bottom here. And the Lord shall be king over the earth, and that day shall the Lord be one, his name will be one. His name one, what does one mean? Is then not his name one now? Says Rav Nachman bar Isaac, not like this world is the next world, the future world. In this world, his name is written with a yud hey and red aleph dalet, but in the future world, it shall all be one. It shall be written yud hey and pronounced yud hey. The Blessed One, blessed be he, said, not as my name am written as I am read, am written yud hey, red aleph dalet. It's a Gemara. The Gemara tells us that in the future, when we say, b'yomo hu yashem echad u'shmo echad, Ushimo, 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 Echad. What is that talking about? Right now, Hashem's name isn't one. We see Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, but we say Adonai. In the future, we will say Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. We're just not ready for it. We need to hold on to monotheism to protect our sense of individuality, even though it's at the cost of independence and illusion. But it's worth the cost so that we don't melt into a melting pot of oneness and lose any sense of identity. And that's really how love works. You're born in the world, I'm not her, she's not me, we're so different. And then you meet your soulmate and you realize, oh my gosh, we're one. But you've had enough time away from this woman that you don't lose yourself in that oneness. Do you follow that? Right? Right? And that's the question of love. In order for us to be we, do I have to lose me? That's the question of love. True love is there's a we that embraces and enhances and reinforces me, and I find me in a we. And that's an incredible experience where I find myself outside of myself. I don't lose myself outside myself. Before that, though, so I'm not you, you're not me. We were born in completely different worlds, right? My wife landed in Paris. I landed in Toronto. She's Sephardi. I'm Ashkenazi. You couldn't meet a more different couple. It's a miracle that we are married. We are so different. And yet what's incredible, thank you, what's incredible is that, thank you, you find the me in the we, and the we does not obliterate the me. One last thing. Look at Albert Einstein. A human being is part of a whole, called by us the universe. We'd actually say called by us Ein Sof. A part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us from our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circles of compassion, to embrace all living creatures and the whole family and the whole of nature and its beauty. You'd think that he read this piece of Rav Kook, right? Incredible what he just said. This is just coming from his Jewish neshama. He just intuits this truth from his Jewish neshama. Okay, that's it for today. If you want to hold on to it, great. You can hold on to it. If not, you want to give it back to me, fine, give it back to me. Shkaya.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yeah. Go to it.